Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're dedicating our entire show today to talking about the life and legacy of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who, as you know, died Friday at 87 years old. Later in the program, we'll be talking about her life and legacy with an abortion rights activist, a political scientist, and one of Ginsburg's former clerks, who's presently a law professor at DePaul and also served as Illinois Solicitor General. But first, Supreme Court politics being what they are, and Ginsburg's death coming so close to the presidential election, as soon as word got out, the jockeying began over who should succeed her and when. A key player in that fight will be Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. He's a member of the Judiciary Committee, which typically holds hearings on Supreme Court nominees. I spoke with the senator earlier this morning. Senator Durbin, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Later in the program, we'll be talking with one of Justice Ginsburg's former clerks and others about her life and legacy. But I want to know, what do you think she should be most remembered for?
Isn't it interesting? What a coincidence that in a matter of just a few days, we lose John Lewis, a civil rights icon, one of the last people standing from that era, and then to lose Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I really came to realize by speaking to the women in my family how much she meant to them personally. The fact that she lived a life where she was discriminated against because of her gender and still made it all the way to the highest court of the land and spent her time really defending and advocating for those who had no voice. She was an extraordinary person. I'm sorry that this political debate that has gone on about her successor has taken us away from really reflecting on her greatness.
Yeah, and as I said, we will be reflecting on that and her life and legacy later in the program. But I do want to ask you about the obviously, you are in the Senate. You're a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And 4 years ago, Lindsey Graham, who's the Judiciary Committee chairman, he had this to say.
I want you to use my words against me. If there's a Republican president in 2016 and a vacancy occurs in the last year of the first term, you can say, Lindsey Graham said, let's let the next president, whoever it might be, make that nomination, and you could use my words against me, and you'd be absolutely right. We're setting a precedent here today, Republicans are, that in the last year, at least of a lame duck 8-year term, I would say it's going to be a 4-year term, that you're not going to fill a vacancy of the Supreme Court based on what we're doing here today. That's going to be the new rule.
So, Senator Durbin, what is your message today to Senator Graham and other Republicans who seem intent on filling the vacancy post-haste?
I think Lindsey realized 4 years ago with the Anton Scalia vacancy and the McConnell strategy, which said we will not allow the Senate to fill the vacancy. We'll wait and see if there's a new president. Let that person do it. I think he realized that that was a departure from where the Senate had been. But the entire Republican Senate caucus got in line behind Mitch McConnell and argued that it was the right and logical thing to do and a matter of principle. Here they are 4 years later in the humiliating position where Mitch McConnell is saying, reverse your position. If it's a Republican president, it's a different story. We're going to fill this vacancy if we have 15 free minutes on the floor of the Senate. It has to be an embarrassment to my colleagues to face the reality that what they said and swore by 4 years ago, they are abandoning so quickly for an obvious political reason.
Can I ask if it was wrong for the Republicans 4 years ago to say Merrick Garland's nomination for Justice Scalia's vacancy should not be considered until after the presidential inauguration? Why is it not wrong now for Democrats to be saying, as Vice President Joe Biden has said, that the Justice Ginsburg's successor should be nominated by whoever wins the November election?
Well, if we concede that point the way you've just argued it, it basically says, the Democrats have to take the position that they lose regardless of circumstances. Now, that's just not right. If there's going to be a process, the process should be consistent. It was consistent until 4 years ago, and we protested what McConnell did. Now, when the same circumstances come up, a late vacancy right before an election on the Supreme Court, the suggestion that, well, we'll just go by that new rule, the new McConnell rule, whatever it is, whatever happens, Democrats lose. That's not a fair outcome in any respect. I think what Joe Biden was arguing in the Washington Post this morning is he hoped there were a few senators of conscience on the Republican side who would say, it's just not fair to do this. We play by one set of rules or the other. You don't change the rules to fit the circumstances.
Would you have viewed things differently had Senate Republicans allowed hearings and a vote on Merrick Garland 4 years ago?
Well, of course, it would be a much easier thing to argue. But remember, they not only didn't give him a hearing, Mitch McConnell announced to his caucus, we are refusing to meet with the man in our office. Hmm. We won't even sit down and have a cordial meeting with him. There were a couple exceptions of Republican senators who thought that was outrageous. But by and large, he was to be shunned. This was the Obama nominee who, frankly, from McConnell's point of view, was never to be acknowledged existing. And that, to me, shows the lengths he went to under those circumstances.
How quickly could Republicans get this nomination through? I mean, there's no, as I understand it, there's no, there may be precedent and norms about having meetings with justices and among individual senators and then holding hearings in the Judiciary Committee. But is there any requirement or can that be dispensed with?
It can all be dispensed with. I've said somewhat facetiously, but I'm afraid it's true. If Mitch McConnell has 60 minutes of time, while Donald Trump is still the president and he McConnell still has a majority in the Senate, he'll put this nomination through.
I mean, without getting into the weeds of Senate procedure, there are things that Democrats could do, right, to stall and obstruct daily business, demanding roll call votes on the many procedural things that are usually sort of politely handled through, I think, what's called unanimous consent. I mean, is that something that Democrats are prepared to do in this case to try and block rapid consideration of a Trump nominee?
Well, first and foremost, people should know the filibuster does not apply. A simple majority vote is all that's necessary. That was a rules change which Mitch McConnell put in place when it came to the Supreme Court. And so the minority in the United States Senate under these circumstances can irritate and delay slightly, but cannot change the outcome.
I have seen suggestions online, and you know, it's obviously easier to armchair quarterback from the confines of Twitter than I imagine it is on the floor of the U.S. Senate, but of Democrats perhaps using the federal budget, as we've seen Republicans do. I mean, there's a need for, as I understand it, a continuing resolution to keep the government going. That, you know, if House Democrats wanted to get on board with this, is that something that Democrats should consider using as a sort of bargaining chip in the Supreme Court negotiations?
I think there are two weaknesses in that argument. The obvious one is shutting down the government causes hardship on a lot of innocent people across the United States, number one. Number two, even with the government shut down, as we've described it, unfunded, the Senate can still be in session. The Senate can still act. So shutting down the government to refusing to agree on spending for the government agencies would not stop the Senate from its business. And clearly McConnell's number one order of business is filling this Ruth Bader Ginsburg vacancy.
And I'm sure you've heard this argument as well, that the next time Democrats have unified control of government, being Congress and the presidency, be that next January or sometime in the future, that they should pursue something like court packing. Do you think that Democrats should consider increasing the number of justices on the court?
I think it's totally wrong for us to be speculating on changing the court in the long haul or constitutional changes. I've heard that as well. I really believe we ought to focus on the here and now. The first thing the American people have to understand is that this debate over filling the Ginsburg vacancy is not just some political science master's thesis debate in Washington among the big shots with the big titles. The Supreme Court will make a decision that will affect the life of every American, and will do it soon with the future of the Affordable Care Act. That Affordable Care Act says you can have health insurance whether you have a pre-existing condition or not. The Republicans and Donald Trump want to end that protection. That's why they've gone to the court to abolish the Affordable Care Act. The Supreme Court will decide that. So for each and every American, the thing that we want to get across is this is a very real debate. Make it clear to the people representing you in the United States Senate where you stand when the Supreme Court has that kind of power.
You know, over the weekend, I saw someone noting that depending on how the president proceeds here, presuming for now that he will nominate someone, that it's possible that Republicans will have nominated 6 of the 9 Supreme Court justices, despite the party winning the popular vote really only once in the last three decades, in 2004. But 92, 96, 2000, as you know, 08, 12, and 16, the Democratic candidate won the popular vote. Does that not speak to the need for some sort of deep structural change with the Electoral College, or perhaps even with the Senate itself?
Well, I am loath to suggest amendments to the Constitution. I've done it twice since I was elected to Congress. The first was to abolish the Electoral College. Ray LaHood, a Republican congressman from Illinois, joined me in that plea. It is tough politically to try to imagine how such a change in the Constitution would make it through the Senate. The fact that the Senate is constructed in a way to give extraordinary power to small states with smaller populations, and that's what the Electoral College is also designed to do. Here's what it boils down to. There is a real question about the legitimacy of our democracy when you reach the point where the president does not reflect majority will in our country, and the Senate does not either. We are just a few years away, of the point where 70% of the American people, 70% of our population, will be represented in 15 states. That means 30 senators out of 100 will represent 70% of the population, and 70% of the senators will represent 30% of the population, and they have extraordinary power in the Senate. We need this national conversation because if the government is to be respected and to be effective, it has to be credible and it has to be legitimate.
You do hear suggestions from people that perhaps if the District of Columbia were granted statehood, Puerto Rico, and I mean, I suppose you could throw in the Virgin Islands, Guam, and American Samoa, and the Northern Mariana Islands while you're at it. If statehood was expanded, that could change the dynamics of the Electoral College. Is that something that the Democrats would or should be looking at?
Well, I can tell you, I've supported D.C. statehood. I've not made a public position clear on Puerto Rico, but I'm open to that conversation as well. It is hard to imagine how 800,000 people living in the District of Columbia can be treated like every other American citizen until it comes to congressional representation. I don't think it makes sense. I think it reflects, frankly, some of the thoughts post-Reconstruction about the role of African Americans in the future of our country. I support D.C. statehood, and yes, it could change the equation. That's why Republicans are loath to see that suggestion go forward.
I want to ask about, I think that when people look at what Senator McConnell did 4 years ago, immediately, I think it might have been the day, within a day, certainly, of when Justice Scalia had died, made his announcement that there would not be any consideration of a nominee without even knowing who it was. You know, it's clear that he and Republicans are willing to use whatever means are at their disposal to fight. And I think that sometimes Democratic activists think that, well, because Democrats won't shut down the government the way Republicans do, maybe they're not willing to fight as hard as the Republicans are. What is your message to Democrats who maybe see in sort of asymmetry of willingness to do whatever it takes to gain political power in Washington?
I'm in the meetings when the doors are closed and the Democratic senators are discussing these issues. And I can tell you there's no shortage of resolve to do the right thing, to see this country move forward, and to defy President Trump and Senator McConnell when they embark on their own political agenda. No question about it. But my plea to our friends and supporters, think it through. Make sure what we're doing is the right thing to do, one. Number two, there aren't too many innocent victims, if any. And number three, that when it's all said and done, that swath of American politics, which considers itself independent, believes that it was a credible, respectable, and effective way to address a legitimate problem. We have to measure everything against that.
The last thing I want to ask you about, you mentioned the current case pending before the United States Supreme Court on the Affordable Care Act. What else are you concerned about that could be at risk? Obviously, a lot of people focus on Roe versus Wade and women's reproductive health and the right to access abortion as a big thing that could change. What else are you concerned about should the court's ideological polarity shift in this way?
Well, as you've gone through the litany, think about what you've said. First, the health care and health protection of every single American family. That's a great starter. Secondly, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's lifetime work to give women a voice and to give them equal treatment in America. boy, it's long overdue. Our Constitution, which we swear to uphold and defend as members of Congress, started off on the wrong foot when it came to that. We know 100 years ago, we gave women the right to vote, just 100 years ago. And it's an indication that that battle still continues. But that isn't the end of it at all. The whole voting rights question to me goes to the heart and soul of this country. I mentioned that I had two proposed constitutional amendments in my career. One was on the Electoral College, and the second I introduced a few weeks ago is to establish a constitutional right to vote. People don't believe it when I tell them there is no constitutional right and protection to vote, and there should be. That should be the starting point in a democracy. And we have seen that voting rights issue abused dramatically for racial reasons and political reasons, even to this day. The battle that's going on state after state to restrict voting, to require IDs, to limit the time you can vote ahead of time, to limit the manner in which you can vote, has little or nothing to do with fraud and quite a bit to do with the political agenda. So that is certainly an issue that will continue to come before the Supreme Court. And let me just say, overwhelmingly, this court rules in favor of businesses, in favor of special interest. It was the case before Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed. It will be again if the Republicans have their way.
Senator Dick Durbin is the senior U.S. Senator from Illinois. He's also a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Durbin, thank you for being with us today on the 21st.
It's good to be with you, Brian. Thank you.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.